even Google.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The economy is getting everybody, even seemingly untouchable companies like Google. Google's stock is down $50 this morning after a disappointing profit report. Shares are below $500 apiece for the first time since April. Yes, still $500 apiece. Google did have some one-time charges last quarter, so things might be better than they look on paper. The company says it's fine. IBM looks rock solid. Profits climbed 22% in the second quarter, and IBM raised its outlook for the year. Citigroup had an awful quarter. It lost $2.5 billion. But just like the other banks this week, that was better than expected, and Citigroup shares are 10% higher. All this adds up to some minor losses on Wall Street so far. The Dow is down 29 points to 11,417. The NASDAQ has dropped 31, mainly that Google announcement. The S&P 500 has dropped 4. European shares are up more than 1%. In Asia, the markets closed 0.5% lower. Last year, Mattel was getting kicked in the teeth, all those toy recalls from China. But things are looking much better this morning. A good profit report for one. And yesterday, the company won a huge lawsuit against the people who make the Bratz dolls. More on that from Steve Henn.
Since 2001, the toy industry has been torn apart by an epic battle in the Valley of the Dolls. Mattel's iconic Barbie doll has been locked in mortal combat for market share with a posse of younger club-hopping party dolls, the Bratz.
The girls with a passion for fashion. See it tonight.
Parents might hate the Bratz' pouty demeanor and skimpy outfits, but doll experts, even my own six-year-old, are obviously fascinated by their signature look.
They have big eyes, and then they have big lips, like that big.
Mattel alleged that look was created by one of their own employees, who then sold the idea to a rival. Yesterday, a jury agreed. That means Mattel could end up earning royalties or even owning the Bratz line, which rakes in approximately $1 billion in sales each year. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Here's a pretty cool story. The Big Mac turns 40 this year, and McDonald's is holding a songwriting contest for a new jingle. There are 5 finalists. Their songs are posted online where people can vote on them. One of the finalists is Tamian Derek Bain. He's 29 years old and lives in Miami.
To all beef patties, what a special sauce. Cheese, pickles, lettuce, onions on a sesame seed.
When he was 14, Tamian robbed a McDonald's at gunpoint. He was treated as an adult and served 12 years in prison. That's where he got his interest in music. McDonald's announces the winner next week. This is the Morning Report for Friday, July 18th on Marketplace.org. Europe doesn't have a lot of trust in Intel. Antitrust officials have filed new charges against the company. They say Intel's been stifling competition. From the European desk, Stephen Beard reports.
The European Commission claims Intel has been playing dirty, trying illegally to push its lesser-known rival AMD out of the market. Intel allegedly paid a leading European retailer not to stock products containing AMD chips. Intel denies the charges. It says they stem solely from complaints made by their old rival. Barry Fox is with New Scientist magazine. He says as the overall market for new electronic equipment shrinks, this battle between the two chip makers is getting nasty.
You've got Intel currently making record profits and AMD showing losses. So it's not surprising that AMD is going to pull out all the stops to fight Intel.
The European Commission is clearly taking AMD's complaints seriously. If it finds Intel guilty, it could fine the company 10% of its annual sales. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Coca-Cola turned in its profit report yesterday. It was better than expected, but it still wasn't very good. So Coke is going to raise its prices. Sam Eaton has more.
Higher commodity and bottling costs have eaten into Coca-Cola's bottom line. The solution, at least for Coke's bottling company Coca-Cola Enterprises, is to pass those costs on to consumers. But retail analyst Phil Limpert says the strategy may backfire.
When we look at the soda business, we're seeing sales decline year after year for almost the past decade. So when you have price increases hitting, more consumers are going to be looking at that bottle of Coca-Cola and saying, do I really need this?
Especially with the recent run-up in food costs. Limpert says consumers are foregoing soda pop for more essential items like milk and bread. And if they do splurge on bottled drinks, they're more likely to buy generic store brands at a lower cost. Limpert says instead of raising prices, Coke should innovate. And the first place to start, he says, is by speeding the launch of drinks sweetened with stevia, the first all-natural zero-calorie sweetener. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Federal law requires commercial truckers to speak enough English they can read road signs and talk to police. Now the government is planning to tighten those rules. From our America's desk at WLRN, Dan Gretsch reports.
Commercial truck drivers are in short supply, so companies have been recruiting heavily among Hispanics. Today, one in six drivers is Hispanic. That's more than 500,000 truckers nationwide. No one knows how many of those drivers don't speak English, but truck driver David Casanova says it's often difficult to communicate by radio with other drivers.
You can't talk to them, you know, over the CB. How do you tell a guy you got a flat tire, hey, buddy, you know, you got a trailer door swinging if they don't understand, or, listen, you can't be on that road. It says right there, no trucks. I've seen that a couple times.
Last year, more than 25,000 tickets were given to truck drivers who didn't speak English well enough to talk to police. Starting sometime next year, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration will ban interpreters from the driving portion of the license exam. That's expected to weed out drivers with poor English skills. Applicants can still take the written portion of the test in their native tongue. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
The U.S. isn't by any means the only country dealing with the issue of migrant workers. In China, Beijing's Olympic building boom has been fueled by millions of migrants. But all that construction is ending, and the workers are leaving. They really weren't welcomed in the first place. Lisa Chow reports from Beijing.
The neighborhood surrounding Zhang Long's apartment building is one big construction site. But you wouldn't know as he walks his Pekingese dog in a quiet, enclosed courtyard. The dusty air from the construction outside is one thing, but it's the migrant workers who really bug him.
They're dirty. They're messy. Who can handle being so close to them?
Zhang is a retired bus driver, born and raised in Beijing. He invites over his friend, Shi Deyuan, also a retired driver, to talk about the migrant workers.
We can't live without them, but deep down inside, we hate them.
You shouldn't say that, even if it's true. And besides, whether you're from Beijing or not, we're all Chinese.
Less than a block away, outside large tents that serve as barracks, migrant workers play music on their cell phones to pass the time. Zhang Jinfeng came to Beijing a year ago from the neighboring Hebei province.
On the farm, we don't have skyscrapers. Maybe it's not a big thing for people in the city, but for me, wow, skyscrapers.
Zhang is 53. He came here by himself and says he doesn't have a family back home to take care of. He suffers from a limp, and because he's older than the typical migrant worker, he does landscaping instead of the more labor-intensive road and construction work.
I don't have weekends nowadays. Why? Because we've got a tight schedule with the Olympics coming. We work 8 to 9 hours every day.
Zhang said as a farmer, he used to make 3,000 yuan a year. That's about $430. In Beijing, he earns more than triple that amount.
After working in Beijing for 8 to 10 years, I'll be richer than the farmers back home, and I can use the money to help develop the countryside.
I ask him if he ever feels discriminated against.
No, I don't. We do the most physical jobs, the hardest jobs, and it helps develop the city. Beijing people know, and we know, that they need us.
It's the one thing that local residents and migrant workers agree on. In Beijing, I'm Lisa Chow for Marketplace.
Today is Nelson Mandela's birthday. He's 90. South Africa has come a long way since apartheid, not just socially, economically as well. Gretchen Wilson gives us Exhibit A.
At At this Guess clothing store, customers paw through racks of designer jeans and t-shirts. Sales here are exceeding all expectations. This mall has everything, from Prada sandals to Bulgari sunglasses. But it's in one of South Africa's former shantytowns, Soweto. This place was a hub of political activism during the anti-apartheid movement. Now, it's the seat of South Africa's emerging middle class. Store manager Temla Dlamini says these days, Sowetans want to be known for their buying power, not their poverty.
The thing is, you look at this new mall, people feel that, you know, at last, they've got something that they can look at and they can be proud of. Everybody's excited about it.
Everybody, including Nelson Mandela, who headlined the mall's opening ceremony. And if you look past the fountains and skylights in this $65 million superstructure, it tells an even bigger story about how the country's economic aims have shifted in the 14 years since apartheid ended, from radical social democracy to full-scale capitalism. Cliptown, Soweto, is an area just a few miles from where the mall now stands. Back in 1955, Nelson Mandela joined communists and other activists at this very spot. They called for the nationalization of the country's mining and banking industries. But after apartheid ended, the new leadership focused more on privatization and trade agreements than tightening government's grip on business. Political analyst Dale McKinley.
Capital-friendly policies were adopted across the board.
While that alienated the ruling party's longtime allies, the Communist Party and the Trade Union Federation, it reassured international investors, and it sparked GDP growth of about 5% nationwide. That's a catalyst for consumer spending, and businesses are thriving. In Soweto, shoppers say they're glad Johannesburg's formerly white suburbs are now not the only place to buy the latest fashions. In Soweto, South Africa, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
Now for an anti-mall story. We've been wondering whether businesses in walkable cities are doing better now that people are driving less. Mitchell Hartman takes a walk in Portland, Oregon.
Portland's Pearl District gets an almost perfect score. Streets are narrow, sidewalks are wide, there's lots of street-level retail. Eric Wernes and Aaron Heath are visiting from Boston.
We've been here for a day, and already we are getting around pretty easily.
It doesn't take very long to get anywhere. Someone will tell us, go 10 blocks if you want to find this store or whatever, and we're noticing that 10 blocks is like nothing.
Nearby in Chinatown, Christopher Yarrow has a shop selling home furnishings and knickknacks from Southeast Asia.
There's a combination of street traffic and also public transportation has a big effect. When people come down here or they walk into my store, I generally find that they're kind of looking for an experience.
Yarrow's happy that experience-seeking shoppers can mosey in on foot, but there's a downside. Portland's been planned to discourage driving, and there's not much parking. So Yarrow knows he's losing some potential customers to the not-very-walkable suburban mall. In Portland, I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.